These eyes are not made to look at the surface of things. They are made to worship a God, that beatific vision of who God is in all of his glory and splendor. These eyes were made for that, to be drawn to that. And now we're drawn to the things of this world and we look at them superficially. And John says, that doesn't come from the Father.
This is The Journey, the radio ministry of Bethel Church in Northwest Indiana, featuring the teaching of Steve DeWitt. Our eyes often get us in trouble. We find ourselves getting distracted by the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and pride of life. The Apostle John writes and tells us that these things are not from the Father, but are from the world. So why should we avoid the world? Why shouldn't I want to be like them? Today on The Journey, part two of the message, The Futility of Loving the World. If you missed the first part of the message, you can go back and listen to it at thejourney.fm. Just click on the teaching tab, or you can subscribe to our podcast, The Journey with Pastor Steve DeWitt. If you have your Bible, we're in 1 John chapter 2. Here's Steve.
David was on top of his palace going out for a little stroll after taking a nap. All the other kings were out there fighting wars. He's taking life easy. Why? He's King David. He's on top of everything. He can do what he wants. And so there he is, and he looks down, and there's Bathsheba, a beautiful woman who's bathing, and he can see her from the top of his palace. And his eyes set upon her, and his look became a lust and a leer, and his eyes lusted and desired her. Why? Our eyes lust after what our heart craves. It's the way that it works, the lust of the eyes. I think an easy example of this coming off of the David thing is something that I think most men can relate to. I hope so, as I share this. And I share this only from the man's perspective because I've been a man all my life. So sisters, sorry about this, but I think men, you'll probably connect with this, that I have found in my life that I can be flipping through a magazine, just doing something quick, or I can be flipping like website, you know, or even driving down 80-94, billboards going by like this. And if my eyes see something that, even subconsciously, looks female, right? The men are like, I am not nodding my head at all to this. Like out of the corner of my eye or something, drawn to it. And then have you ever had it where you actually look at the thing and it's like an advertisement for fruit or something, you know? You're like, oh, it's not what I thought it was. Again, the men are going, I'm not saying nothing right now. There was something about the shape. There was something about the look that made me think, oh. Why? Because God put a good desire in men for women. And the men said, okay, we celebrate that. But the sin nature corrupts that by seeking satisfaction in that outside the confines of marriage. And you see how we can take a good thing and we can make it an obsession, make it an ultimate thing, and how easily our hearts are swayed. It can be anything. If you obsess over Corvettes, you see every Corvette on the road. If you crave coffee, you can spot a Dunkin' Donuts from a mile away. Oh, look, there's the Dunkin' Donuts symbol. And it's, you know, person with you is like, it's a desert there. I don't see anything. You've got like spidey senses to see it. And why? Because my heart craves it. And so my eyes want what my heart craves. Now, why is this a problem? Here's why it's a problem, and here's why he's talking about it, is that from the world's perspective, it is only the appearance of things that matter. In this world, there is a sense where it's just, it's the outward, right? It's the outward that is valued. It is the outward that is an indication of significance and worth. So that in this world, our eyes alight upon all kinds of things, lightly touching them, but never getting past the surface down to the real meat and the substance of things. This is why Jesus drove the Pharisees crazy. They were all about appearances. They were all about the outward show. They were all about religion on the outside. And along comes Jesus, and he doesn't care about that. And he looks past all of that to the heart of the person. And he hung and cared for people that the Pharisees on the outside said they are insignificant. But Jesus did not have the lust of the eyes like this. He looked past it to the real meaning and the heart. But in this world, there is none of that. It's missed on people. It's all like the old ad, image is everything. And so we live in a world that Botoxes everything and airbrushes everything so that even what our eyes see isn't real. Why does our world go that way? Because it is all about the lust of the eyes and the appearance of things. So superficial. The gazer, the pornographer, the voyeurist. These eyes are not made to look at the surface of things. They are made to worship a God, that beatific vision of who God is in all of his glory and splendor. These eyes were made for that, to be drawn to that. And now we're drawn to the things of this world and we look at them superficially. And John says, that doesn't come from the Father. That comes from the world. It's the way the world is, and you know what I'm talking about. Lust of the eyes. In the third category, pride in possessions. And this hardly has to be explained. I think we all kind of get what he's talking about. It literally means the boastfulness of life. And the idea here is of the individual who desperately wants to give off a sense of self-importance and does so by propping him or herself up with the status symbols of the culture. And by doing that and giving off an air of importance because I have the status symbols around me, wants everybody to think I am really important because look at me, look what I have. In fact, the Greek word there, it's kind of like the presumptuousness of life. There's sort of like the empty braggart, the person trying to convince other people of how important he is, that kind of talker, the big hat, no cattle kind of guy. The thing that comes to my mind, and you've seen this before, is when you see like a 17-year-old boy and he's driving daddy's BMW. You know the look that he's got on his face I'm talking about? And you want to think, you didn't pay for that. It's your daddy's BMW. And I want to punch you in the face right now. Right? As he drives by, they're doing that kind of, yeah, look at me. I watched the dunk contest last night. You see it all there too, right? They do the dunk and just, the whole like touchdown kind of, that whole thing. What is that? That's not from the Father. I know that. The ability to dunk like that is from the Father, but the attitude after it's done is from the world. That's the world that we live in. Such pride, such boastfulness, such presumption. And again, possessions are not the problem. Pride in the possessions are the problem. It is when our possessions possess us. It is when things are our identity. As Spurgeon said, the problem is not that the church isn't getting into the world, but there is so much world in the church. God's people propping themselves up, not with godliness and fruits of the Spirit, not identifying with Jesus, but like the world saying, hey, look how important I am. We get these kind of people that come visit our church sometimes. And from day one, they want to convince me how important they are. It is absolutely annoying. I did this at the other church and I did that at the other church and you're lucky that I'm here now. What do you say to that? Perhaps you'd like to be a blessing at some other church then. Possessions, so often they possess us. How do you know if your possessions are possessing you? How easily do you give them up? How easily do you give them up? Why would I give them up? I like having lots of them. How do you react when they're taken away? When the stock market's going like that. You know, back in 1929, the stock market crash. Maybe you've heard the stories about at the end of the day, there were all these very formerly successful businessmen who were just walking to the top of the tall buildings and just jumping off to their death. Why would sane and rational, probably educated businessmen at the end of a day of work walk to the top of buildings and jump off? If your identity is in your possessions, when you don't have them, you have no identity, you have no life. And that happens around us all the time. When possessions possess us. For all that is in the world, the lust, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. When I love the world, I am dominated by the desires of the flesh. I want more and more of the world. And my eyes, coming off of what my heart desires, looks at things superficially based upon what the world says is really, really important. And the world says that possessions are important, and if I have a lot of them, I am important. And so therefore, I now boast about and view myself as eminently important because by the standards of the world, I am somebody. That's the way the world operates, not the Father and not the true Christian. Love the world and love what comes from the world. Love the Father and love what comes from the Father. The second reason not to love this world is that it is passing away. That's the rest of the verse here. And the world is passing away along with its desires. You know, we're so engrossed in this world and the way that the world operates, it seems normal to us. But isn't there often a sense for kind of middle-class folk where the people that are rich, the powerful, the beautiful, they're always going to be the rich, the powerful, and the beautiful. Sounds like a soap opera, doesn't it? They're just always going to be that way. The certain families, they're always connected. They always have resources. They're always winning the elections. Other people, they're always the ones in the movies. They're always in the news. They're always on the front page of People magazine. Other people, their family had money. They take the money. They make more money. They're the ones that are always living large, always driving the cars, always wearing the clothes. They're just all, it's always going to be the way that it is if you have all that stuff. And yet, what does history show us about the rich, the powerful, and the beautiful people? What happens to all of them? They die. And then what comes of their riches and what comes of their power and what comes of their beauty? What comes of the kings and the queens of England, fabulously wealthy, who are dead now? And what comes of the pharaohs of Egypt? You want to talk about wealth? Did you ever see the King Tut display? Whoa, right? Fabulous wealth. What happens to them? Have you seen the mummy? Not so good. How about the beautiful people? How about the famous Cleopatra? How about Marilyn Monroe? How's Marilyn Monroe looking right now? Not so good, I'm thinking. They won't put her on the front of any magazine right now. Why? Because riches and power and money, they all pass away. And history shows that. But the world doesn't want to think about that, doesn't want to see that. But God's people, looking at this whole thing, not from the perspective that this world is all that matters, but from the perspective of eternity, realizes that all of the rich people, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the musicians, the artists, the philosophers, the politicians, all of them die. And with their death goes all of their lustings and cravings and all the things that they acquired. Another example of this, and this is probably one of the most annoying things on television every year, is the annual Academy Awards. I'll occasionally watch them, and if there's any place where they're the pride, like the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life are on full display, it's the way that the Academy Awards show, you know, happens. The red carpet, you know, the clothes, the dress. She's wearing a purple dress. And like for 3 days, people talking about the seam and the satin on the purple dress. So important. so important. And if you watch the show, most, at least for me, most of the time, with all the self-congratulation that they're giving each other, you just want to blah, you know. And the winner is blah. I want to thank all the little people in my life that I can't mention because I don't have time, blah. But there is one part of the Academy Awards that's worth watching, and they do this every year. It's when they play the video of all the people from the industry who died in the previous year. Have you seen this? You know what I'm talking about? That is worth watching. It's my favorite part of the broadcast. You know, and they show them in their prime, in their youth. They're so, you know, I don't know if you think this, but this is how I think when that's playing. I think to myself, what about all the people that are sitting there in the whatever theater it's in? And they're watching the video. Do any of them stop and think to themselves for a moment, those people just a few years ago were sitting right where I am. And they were pretty, and they were popular, and they were making tons of money, and they're in the movies, they're famous. And now look at them. What has all of that done for them? Because they are dead. Maybe I should think about another way of living. It doesn't seem to happen, does it? Why? Because this world is blinded to the truth. This world is fleeting. It is passing. Live for the things that this world has to offer, and it's a guarantee that you will not get to keep it any more than all those people and all the rest that have ever lived get to keep it. Why would I have my identity in things that I don't get to keep? Why? Why live that way? And you see that what God is basically doing, it's not oppressive for him to say, don't live for the things of the world, don't get your identity from this world. He is freeing us from the futility of living for a world that is passing away. Freeing us to live a life for things that matter forever. That's the love of God. That's the gospel and the goodness of God in it. Why live for what doesn't last? And think about our community here. You know, all the people tomorrow as work's going on, rushing to jobs and frantically running around, doing this, that, and the other, working so hard, striving, laboring, craving, lusting, hoping maybe a break will come and I'll get this thing and my life will be great and awesome. And you know, the singles, oh, if only I was married. The married, oh, only if I was single. And, you know, the poor, oh, if only I was rich. The rich thinking, oh, if only something else actually satisfied me. And if only I had this house or this spouse or this educational experience or this degree or this achievement in my job. If only I had that, then my life would really matter. And none of those things matter. Not ultimately, because they don't last. And God wants us to live our life for things that matter and last. And that's the rest of this verse. The world is passing away along with all of its desires. But whoever does the will of God abides forever. And that is good news. In a world like this, where? Or in a church like this. I'm looking around. You know what? I don't see very many powerful people. I don't see any ultra-rich people. I do see a lot of good-looking people. We're mostly ordinary here, aren't we? We're ordinary people. And what John's writing about here is encouraging because the life that lasts, the life that matters, is accessible for all of us. I don't have to be born into the right family. I don't have to have graduated from the right college. I don't have to have some person that's putting me in a high place and some another matter. What do I need? I need God and a life that is lived to his will is a life that will last and matter forever. Why do I say that? Because God promises when we live a life loving him, obsessing over him, wanting to please him. We do that imperfectly, but directionally, I'm seeking in order to please the Lord. That is a life that matters in this life. The eye of God is upon it, and the reward of God is to it in the next life. Everything I give in this life, I get to keep in the next. Whatever I keep in this life, I lose. That's the logic that Jesus uses in Mark 8. Calling the crowd with his disciples, he said to them, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul?" Jesus is saying, listen, in this world, it's all about gaining and keeping. But the irony of the gospel is in order to get what you want forever, you've got to give up the temporary. And the world says, that's crazy, don't do it, hoard it, keep it, protect it, find your security in it, live for it, lust after it, crave it, find your identity in it, obsess over it. And Jesus says, give it up, surrender it, take up your cross and follow me. And in doing that, you will gain what you will never have to give up. This is Jim Elliot. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. And that little phrase has sent missionaries into the world, giving up the fleeting to live for forever. How about you? Have you surrendered your rights, your identity to the things that this world says is so important? Not that we can't have and begin, possessions are not the problem. It's when they possess me. It's when I live for them. It's when I lay in bed and dream about them. It's when I think if I have them, then I will be happy. That flows from the world and not from the Father. Now, the world listens to a message like this and they think that we're the nut jobs, right? Why would you ever give up something? Why give? Why support? Why sacrifice? Why not live for the things that we think are really important? Why would you do that? And we say the reason that we do that, we don't get to keep it. And by not doing it, we're going to keep what we never have to give up. I say they're the nut jobs. Who's really crazy? Who's really living wisely? Are you living wisely, friend? Are you? Look at your time. Look at what you do with your talents. Look at what you're doing with your money. Look at what you're doing with your dreams. Let's dream for what lasts. Let's give our life to what lasts. We live in the world. We've got desires. We have needs and all the rest. We have possessions. We have money. We can aspire to things in our career. We can aspire to things in education. But I am not going to make a good thing an ultimate thing, because my life, what's ultimate is God. And everything else is a gift from Him, which I can give up when He wants me to, and I'm certainly not going to live for. Now, I don't know if I could repeat that, but that was pretty good right there. He who does the will of God abides forever. This is eternal life. This is the gift from God. Obedience is a fruit of genuine salvation. It shows that we know God and love Him. And this is the goodness of God. He wants to free us from a fleeting world. And what God is saying is don't live for what's not lasting, fleeting. It's so seductive. It's drawing us, but it's not true. Live for what lasts. Live a life that will matter to God in this life and in the next. And there are challenges with that. We do it imperfectly, and all too often I bow to this world. But the direction of my life as a Christian is for the things of God. And that's the direction that will go on forever. So yet another message, love God more than anything else. I've given this message 1,000 times, but we need it, don't we? So why don't we just take a few moments of meditation right now? If you would just bow your heads, this is an opportunity now just to say, God, I don't want to waste my life. I want to live for what matters, and to hold up the mirror of God's word and to say, am I living by the lusts of this world, the desires of the flesh, or is God on the throne of my heart?
Who or what sits on the throne of your heart? What a convicting and needed message today. Thank you, Steve. This is The Journey with Steve DeWitt. In addition to the broadcast, The Journey also has teaching material available on our website, thejourney.fm. Just click on the teaching tab. When you do, you'll find that we have additional resources there that relate to our current study. We have message notes from each day as well. Check it out at thejourney.fm. While you're there, would you drop us an email? We'd love to hear from you and how the Lord is working in your life. Once again, our website is thejourney.fm. For Steve and the whole team, I'm Tim Svoboda. We'll see you next time right here on The Journey.